You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Gabriella Mirabelli. Gabriella is the foremost authority on translating millennial behavior trends for executives at major media enterprises. She was listed on Inc. as one of the five unsung heroes of new media and is the CEO and co-founder of Anatomy, a New York-based Emmy Award-winning creative agency and branding consultancy. As the host of the Up Next podcast, she talks with the brightest innovators, risk-takers, and disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. Over the last half decade, Gabriella has studied how the practices of media brands intersect with the media consumption habits of millennials. Her most recent in-depth report, Millennials at the Gate, is an examination of streaming, ad blocking, and piracy habits of young millennials. It has been cited by major publications such as Forbes, The Wrap, Media Post, and Yahoo Finance. Gabriella, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really fun to be here.
There are so many different things I want to ask you, but after reading all of that about millennial behavior, I have to know, are they listening to this podcast?
Well, if they are, they're stealing it somehow. The way the young millennials, and it really is the young millennials. I was looking at sort of it's such a large cohort that the things I wanted to look at were really 18 to 24, because that's kind of most of my clients are really large legacy organizations and they're big ships, and it takes them a while to steer places, to make a directional change. And so this population is on the cusp. And if you want to intersect with where they're headed, you know, as consumers of media, that's why we were looking at that group. And what's interesting is that this group of people, ad blocks. Now, a lot of the talking around ad blocking was always, you know, with print, but really most of the ad blocking is with video. And in this population, 2/3 are ad blocking. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal if you think about it. And 69% of them are pirating. Oh. Yeah, right? And so, you know, they're pirating. And 67% don't think there's anything wrong with pirating. And so if you want to change the behavior, you first have to change how they feel about the behavior. And that's one of the interesting things around the culture of this population. You know, these digital natives, how do they feel about things? It's really a culture of access, as opposed to a culture of ownership.
That's really interesting. And I also like, you know, I mean, I think you find millennial reports and snapshots all over the place. And I think you hit the nail on the head, too, in kind of dividing that group, because I think it's great to have these great big demographic swaths. I mean, same with baby boomers, Gen Xers. But when it's that big, you've really got at least a couple major groups even within that super category as well. So for just a purpose of a definition, do you go with 18 to 24 and for the young group? And then what would the old millennials, I'll make them feel real great by calling them that.
Well, they have, there's an official, you know, I'd have to look, because that's the group I look at, I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
So.
They would be the ones beyond that, but.
Yeah, they're the ones, yes, they're the older ones.
Right,
the ones,
right.
I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting, because, you know, data and big data has become such a buzzword with us, you know, anybody who's dealing with marketing and, you know, finally all of these enterprise-wide software systems, MarTech, AdTech, it's really finally hit marketing. You know, for years we had financial systems integration, you know, supply chain integration, and now it's hitting marketing and all of the looking at the data. But really, you know, if you're thinking about branding and demographic statistics, they're all useful at one level. But ultimately, they're not, because the group you're dealing with isn't monolithic. You know, there are all sorts of, you know, the poor young millennials who are, you know, they're entitled, they want to, you know, have all the goodies and they don't want to work, generation participation trophy. And certainly there are those folks, but there are also people who are absolutely not that way, you know? What? And,
yeah, it's like a slippery slope into like useful. And then all of a sudden we're stereotyping. And I feel like I hear millennials bristling at this, of the idea that, you know, we all grumble around talking about the entitled millennial. And that it's a little bit dangerous there too. So how can we take it and use it to, I guess as the first line of your bio says, translating those behavior trends into things that we can work with as brand builders?
Well, right. I mean, I think that sort of one of the things is thinking about branding as, you're the steward of your brand, and certainly it's about the experience and all of the touch points that you're having as a brand. And so the demographics, the statistics about behaviors, how they're interacting, you know, where those touch points are, that's very useful. You know, you understand where they are. You have Vice, for instance. Mm-hmm. We're going to be a great millennial channel. It's going to be fantastic. Well, if millennials by and large don't watch traditional television, why would they tune in? They might like that content, but the numbers, the rating numbers, last ones I saw, weren't as good as H2, which is the previous, you know, what was on that channel prior.
Yeah.
So, and Pivot folded, you know, that had been the millennial channel before. So, right. You know, how are people consuming media? And so that's important to understand what they're doing, what the culture is. And if you look at how you conceive of the brand, even, you know, is it a show or is it a network? That's actually one of the things we're doing. We're running a study right now on discoverability and programming and how young millennials feel about networks versus shows, and that's yielding some interesting results,
and that's, you know, got to be part of I would imagine kind of a super arc of trends of, you know, from the days when we were loyal to a network and then shows within that network. And, you know, if you were watching Carson, you were watching the NBC nightly, you were kind of in these lanes. And then that got even more diffused with, you know, multiple channels, with cable, with everything else. But then now it's even cross-platform, and I'm seeing, you know, I might rarely watch, you know, Jimmy Fallon, but I see him in my feed, so I'm getting that touch point. I'm getting some sort of a brand impression, but yeah, it is interesting on how, especially brands for media properties, are built.
Well, right. And you identified it as you're getting a touch point with Jimmy Fallon, right? You're mm-hmm. not getting a touch point with NBC, or that's not how your experience of
no.
it is. And so it's interesting to see how various content creators are going about it. I mean, I think that one of the interesting things about the digital age, you know, and having this explosion is, you know, everybody was talking about it's no longer push, it's going to be pull. But then people often went about it the same old way, rather than thinking about if it is a pull environment. And the old way we used to convince people around products or something is that it fulfilled something for them. It's something emotional a lot of times, right? But now you have all these social platforms which are giving that emotional fulfillment. And so how do you get the brand part of that personal connection and fulfillment? How do you feather it in there? You're not the primary, you know, they're not seeking. Because it's, you know, certainly with consumer product, you're not necessarily going to get that emotional dopamine hit from, you know, my refrigerator or whatever, you know, it's not going to give it to you.
Well, if it's akin to anything, it's almost like going to the mall, and I'm just setting out to go to the mall, like, you know, used to do in my generation. And, you know, you didn't really have an idea in mind, and then you were just led to some of these different places. And that's almost, it seems like, with social, that's what we're doing. We're kind of encountering them along our travels, but it is a different animal.
Well, and what's happening there is, you know, the strength of your weak ties, your network. You know, obviously, you know what your very close friends are going to be recommending because you're in conversation with them all the time. But it's sort of your secondary network of people, real people, who are saying things that make an impression on you. That's more influential for you than maybe a sponsored ad, you know, because this is a real person who you know tangentially, so you're not really in the swim with them all the time, but they recommend something and that becomes meaningful to you. And so then that folds into your thinking.
I like that too, the point about the strength of the weak ties, because I think that's where we're moving. And it's kind of outside of the realm of traditional kind of strength-based brand building, that we're going to build something big, strong, consistent, and we're going to beat you over the head with it. We have to, you know, it's no less consistent, but it demands flexibility that I'm not sure that we all have built in.
Well, yeah, I think also the idea is a surrender of control, that you actually how can I put it? You both control and don't control your brand.
Yeah.
You know, you steward the cluster that's drawn to your brand. But the idea of your brand is resident in the people who are clustering there for you, and you're serving them. And so it's what are you providing? I think Apple is a good example of this, where people love Apple and the design and the performance and it, and they become real. And the idea of Apple, and people are Apple people, and that's what they like. But then the latest release has been a real misstep. People are really unhappy with it. And so it'll be an interesting to see how Apple responds. Are they listening? Are they hearing? Are, you know, they don't often make missteps, but they have now. What does this mean? How are they going to adjust? You know? And I think the next thing that we're going to see, you know, we talk about the digital age is sort of changing how people are dealing with brands. I think that the Internet of Things is actually going to really blow apart how branding works, because I was just at a thing at the Paley where they were talking about CES and how the Alexa, you know, and it's in everything. And if you think about, you know, well, why is Amazon really stealing this show? But think about what it means if you have Alexa and she knows when you run out of orange juice and just automatically reorders it, and that is no longer part of your decision matrix. Will an advertisement, will anything matter to you?
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. So all of a sudden, how do you get in?
Well, I want to stay on Amazon. I had an Amazon question, but you just reminded me of another one. We have gotten several Amazon Dash buttons, and they're crazy convenient for those household things that you never remember to get at the store, like detergent and other stuff. But from the consumer behavior standpoint, I had this realization. I said to my wife, we just stopped shopping for detergent.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whose package is intriguing, who has some new variety or you know, smell or some type of different thing that you're changing with your detergent, we have the Tide Dash button. We are there now.
Yes. Yes. The loop is closed. Nobody else can come in now. Right.
Yeah. So then what, is there anything that disrupts that?
I don't know. I think that it's going to be a different, you know, then you're going to have, and this is just, you know, off the top of my head, I think you're going to have, this is where, you know, your authenticity, what becomes important if another brand speaks to, you know, environmental concerns maybe, or something like that, where it would have to inspire you to change. It would have to be something that would move you, because it then would require a level of effort. I mean, I think one of the things that, when we were talking about, well, what's actionable, what's going on with the millennials, it's, their experience. I think that's the other, like, it's really at the heart of the branding. It's what is the individual experiencing, and ease is really important to this group of people. They're looking for ease. But of course, you know, part of that, we, the older people, I'm assuming a young millennial, right. You know, we'll be brought along to the ease. We're used to having things be difficult. So we continue soldiering along with the difficulty. But when our youngster comes to us and says, "Mommy, if you just put this ad blocker on, you'll be like, life will be so much nicer, and let me do it for you." And then you're like, "Wow, this is fantastic. I'm, you know," and so this is why also the behavior, I'll read a fair amount of articles, and a lot of times you'll see, sort of the wishful thinking angle, which is, well, when these people start having households, they're going to start behaving as we do. And it's like, well, why would they, you know? And instead, if this is easier, in order to change the behavior, you've got to make it easier, better, you know, something has to be different about it. And so that is human nature, right? And we're willing to slog through things because that's how we've done it. But if somebody shows you an easier way, wouldn't you like to have that extra time, you know?
Well, and it kind of seems like when you said something would have to move you. I mean, to me, I wrote down when you said that, emotionally, you know, something, it can't be, it I teach marketing also, it can't be, it's not one of the four P's, probably, I dare say, because it's something, like you said, I mean, talked about ease, or if it mattered socially in some way, this product versus another. But yeah, with all of these kind of closed loops, you need to be probably really disruptive from a meaningful standpoint.
Well, right. To what matters to, you know, how do you cut through? And this is where, you know, we again see a lot of around authenticity. I mean, how many times have you read that word, right?
A few.
But what, just a few, you know, periodically it comes up. but, you know, and how this group of people, this audience, the millennial audience, can smell a sale a mile away and they don't like it. Well, no, you know, because they're people, and really at the heart, it has to be about the people, about the experience, about, you know, being consistent with the messaging. I mean, one of the things I think is really interesting is you, like CVS, decided we're about health. Mm-hmm. And if we're about health, how can we sell cigarettes? And they took them out. And I thought that is really, you know, that's really interesting. They're really looking at who they are and how to be consistent with the message of who they are, you know, so that takes them out of the realm of a convenience store and into something else. They're about health and they're being consistent with it. And that sends a message to their consumers. And, you know, is it enough to make you pick a CVS? I don't know, but it helps, you know, you might.
And the other thing with Amazon too, as we record this, we're within a week of the Golden Globes, and it seemed, you know, they were obviously an entertainment provider now. I think categorically that's not the right label, but a content producer. And, you know, that left them open to, you know, a lot of Amazon jokes about, you know, I think they said they shipped Jeff Bezos, but he got there a day early or something. And it occurred to me, you know, that's a big brand transition from one big thing that they've owned, shopping, over to content. And I wonder, does that matter? Is that another one that, like, us olds are going to make jokes about, but, you know, that we might overthink some of that brand flexibility versus rigidness? Does that, something like that, matter to millennials? Do they care that content comes from Amazon versus NBC?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, first, full disclosure, Amazon is a client, and I love Amazon. What's interesting about them in the landscape, because they're competing with other content providers, you know, NBC, as you suggest. Now, if NBC wants to compete with them, they're in different businesses, right? You know, Amazon is in a shipping product business. And so they're going to be able to make choices and decisions, which are very different. You know, they may use entertainment as a loss leader to sell Prime memberships, because if you have a Prime membership, statistically, you're more likely to buy more products. And so their decision matrix around how they're going to pick content, what, you know, how they're going to market content, whether they're going to invest heaps of money in it, and it doesn't need to have a lot of eyeballs, it just needs to create buzz, because that's then free advertising for their name. I mean, all of what it is and what's driving their decisions is very different than a company that's purely a pure play entertainment company, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's a real good point too, because like you said, they're in the shipping product business, and ultimately you can air quote ship, you know, a season of Transparent or you know, Manchester by the Sea. You know, you look at someone like NBC and they're kind of in the audience business, I think. And it seems like that's a harder thing to build alone today.
They have deep, yeah, they have.
We're just picking on NBC, obviously. It's anybody's problem.
Somebody else. it's really unfair.
Could be CBS, it could be ABC, or any number of others.
Well, I think what you're driving at really is a advertiser supported model versus a subscriber supported model, right? Where you are subscribing. And so as a result, I mean, think about the difference between entertainment, which is advertiser supported, is really the product in television. That's ad, you know, traditional television, is the product is the ads, and the show is wrapped around to deliver the ad to you. Whereas if you're subscribing to watch a program on HBO or Netflix or Amazon, it's about the show that's what's being delivered to you. The ad paid for the show on the network, and that's why you have to consume that. You see?
Yeah. Well, and you brought, I mean, and that's a valid point too, bringing HBO into the mix. You know, there you've got a subscriber model that sits on your television like the networks that we just listed. But yeah,
but it's got a higher price point in the traditional. I mean, you can also buy it over the top, you know, because you can buy it directly over the top. I think here's where the distinction, you're saying, do millennials care? Absolutely not. They want what they want, where they want, how they want. And they, you know, it's about the story. It's about the thing, the product. So does it matter that it was Amazon made? Absolutely not. I mean, you could have, and you do have, other companies going into content thinking that this is going to be something they're going to build. Being in the content game is not easy, though. I mean, like GoPro launched content and then shuttered it. So, you know, I think that there's where, you know, someplace like NBC has a lot of experience. They know, they actually do know what they're doing, you know, and there is a value in experience.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. It's just a model shift that probably doesn't come overnight either to an entity of that size and scope, too.
Well, that's exactly right. You've got, and you have a lot of, from an organizational design standpoint, you have a lot of vested interests in any of these large legacy organizations where how do you, it's hard to be nimble, it's hard to change. So what you see is you see investment in things like BuzzFeed, mm-hmm. where you've got, there's sort of the, you know, you can't beat them, you join them, you buy them, yeah. you acquire them, Refinery 29, you know, things like that. That some of the more legacy organizations start getting stakes in these disruptors so that they have a hand in it.
Yeah. Well, and then that gets me back to one of our initial talking points too, is what is the brand? Is it the show? Is it the content brand? Is it the network brand? You know, where do people care and where do you want to?
Well, I have a definite opinion on that. I mean, I think it's all about the show. Absolutely about the show. I mean, in the same way that I don't believe you go to a theater because it's an AMC theater. I think you go to a theater to see the film. However, there is you might go to an art house theater to see what they have because you know they curate things. So similarly, if a network has a track record for curation, you will go to that network and try out their new show. You see how that plays out?
That is so interesting because in our community we have, you know, the big players, Marcus, which was bought by AMC, and you go there to see that movie, and then we have an art house theater that curates stuff that we go to that we love. And it's funny because there's some of these that end up as like some, you know, middle of the spectrum, like something like Jackie, you know, might be at both the AMC, the big theater, but then also is at the smaller one. And there I looked inside my thought process and I'm like, I would rather go to the one, all things being equal, I like the experience at that theater better. So,
well, see, that's exactly, I was going to say the other thing that's interesting with the art house theaters is often they've worked because they've had to, because they're these independent players, they've mm-hmm. worked at creating a better experience. You know, it's real butter on the popcorn. The seats in the projection, you know, the screen is nicer. The projection is nicer. The ushers actually care about film, you know, the entire, every touch point is just qualitatively a little bit better. And you may try, you know, while you're there, maybe there's another film and you've never seen a trailer for it. You have no idea what it's about, but you'll give it a go. You know, it's a rainy day. You might go and see a film and you might go there because it's an experience as opposed to kind of the cattle car multiplex thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really good example, and one that carries over to that, you know, content brand versus, I don't know what you call it, network brand, parent brand, provider brand.
Well, yeah, and I think the other thing that's interesting, especially and challenging for these ad-supported networks, you can curate wonderful content. Okay, you've got this wonderful content, and it's very consistent, but then you have ad breaks, mm-hmm. And the ad break, it's like, can you imagine if Coca-Cola said, okay, we've got, you know, 75% of the bottle is Coca-Cola, and then we let other people pour stuff in there, exactly. And so every ad, you know, I anticipate that we're going to see the networks that are ad supported become a little bit more controlling about their ad pods. I think they're going to probably skinny them down so there are fewer of them. I think they're going to offer services where they create ads that work well with the content. I think you've seen a little bit of this already. If you watch Saturday Night Live, you know, you'll have comedy ad, you know.
Yeah.
And it works. You pay attention. It's funny. You enjoy it and you get the brand. And that is so much more powerful than, you know, gosh, I'm seeing the Geico ad for the fourth time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And again, this is what are we learning from, you know, why are people having ad blocking? It's because the ads are, they're not relevant to me. They're not, they're redundant. They're oppressive. You know, it's about my experience and I am used to owning my experience. And because I'm used to owning my experience and in these other channels, when I turn on the television, that box, I want my experience to be more pleasant, more relevant to me.
I love that. As we start to wrap up, which I hate to do because I am enjoying talking about all of this, we have to ask if there is a brand that has made you smile recently.
And you even told me I was going to get the question. I'm totally spaced out. You know, I would have to say, Netflix. And I would say that what I love about Netflix is that they don't market themselves. They don't, I don't feel oppressively marketed to, and yet they have meaning for me. And I enjoy every time I binge a program, I enjoy it. I love their original programming. And I just, I find them sort of, if there is a company that's doing it right, they're a company that's doing it right. Their focus is on the audience and the people, and the rest is following.
Well, and that's such a great point. You know, we take the smile, the wrap-up question, and I'm going to pull us back into the other conversation. But, yeah, I mean, I think about these kind of the parent brands that are doing it well, like Netflix, like Amazon, are, you know, they do stand for something. And you're right. They're not just, you know, they're not running, you know, lots of, like you said, oppressive advertising. But granted, I think, you know, my kids left the TV on before I came down here to record this. And I did see that great Amazon spot, though, the delivery one with the priest, and it was their holiday ad. But again, they both have meaning. And that's a lot harder to do than one would think.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And what's interesting is what, you know, what makes a good spot, what makes something, it's something that you don't mind seeing again. It's something you'd like to share. It's something you might like to have fun with. And so, you know, that takes energy and time and thought and thinking about people.
Well, and those brands, I mean, the easy part about the show brands is we can build this exactly around that target. We know who this is. I mean, God, Stranger Things is a great example of the whole package. Just matches who it's supposed to, and anybody that doesn't, I'm not sure that you're a great fit. But the parent brands, it's difficult because you do have to find a way to be everything to everybody a little bit.
Well, this is why Netflix is so great, because you have Stranger Things and then you have Hemlock Grove, and maybe the audiences are totally different. So you have these niche, these, you know, what Netflix means to the individual can vary widely in one sense, in terms of the content I'm getting is going to be different than the content my son gets or the content my neighbor gets from Netflix. And yet in other ways, our experience is uniform. The interface is pleasing. It's easy to use. It works when I want it to. It recommends other things I might like. And so I can enjoy it. My experience is enjoyable, and it fills something for me personally, tailored to me.
That is so true. All about the touch points, experience. It all makes sense when you explain it like that. Gabriella, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do and where they can get that great report? Maybe I just asked you 12 questions there. Sorry about that.
Okay. So let's go through. well, the report is actually, my podcast is the Up Next Podcast, and that's upnextpodcast.com. And on the about page, there's a link to download the report for people who are interested in that. And they can also listen to episodes on the podcast. They can also go to my company website, which is anatomymedia.com. And that's how we're a business provider, though, so it's not really individuals. And that's how they can find out more. And I'm also on LinkedIn and whatnot.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Gabriella, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been really fun.
Awesome. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Andrea D. Smith gave us a shout out on Twitter for our episode featuring Seth Godin. Thanks, Andrea. And if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything Gabriella and I talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review. Help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.